My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Midtown Group and in Washington, D.C. And we're a group with heart. We're a pretty good sized group. We're not as sprawling as a Pacific group, but so we know each other personally. And at the same time, we have 38 meetings a week. So, you know, we're pretty active, and we have something like 150 institutions we go to each week. So we're very active in service. And it all really started off with just a few people in my living room. And we decided to become our own group. And my sponsor. And my topic today is courage to change. It's now a non-topic. I don't know why somebody's mad at me, but anyway. I was never able to change myself. You know what I mean? And the truth of it is I can't. You know what I mean? When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, December 5th, 1979, what I found out was, and I was terrified to walk in these rooms, by the way. I was also a daily drinker, just like Valerie shared. And I didn't want to die. I had the true sense of impending doom. And I didn't know what it was. I didn't have those words. I didn't have a lot of words that I've learned since. But I had the feelings. I knew I was in direct danger. I had called Alcoholics Anonymous in a drunken stupor. What's amazing about that is I can't remember and could not remember until I was probably 12 years sober how I even heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I'd never heard of it. I had no recollection of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody in my family knew about AA. Nobody, none of my neighbors knew about AA. None of my friends knew about AA. That's just the world I grew up in. And yet, I called Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know why. Until when I was 12 years sober, I remembered why. Days of Wine and Roses was a movie. I watched it in high school with my girlfriend and 12 miniatures that she stole from her dad. And she had those in her purse. And this is back when they had those soda machines to put a nickel in. I'll tell you something right there. And help drops down, you know what I mean? You want ice, get ginger ale. You know, mixers, miniatures. Great movie, blackout. Of course I didn't remember. See what I'm saying? There's no way to remember, you know? I was in a blackout. And I do remember her name, though, so I'd get a good mark for that. Usually I didn't. I drank for 20-some years, and I came here knowing AA wouldn't work for me. Pretty much predisposed as far as what I heard from my first meeting. But even in my first meeting, the truth entered me. It entered me in the form of I was trying to get out of the meeting. And I'd made up my mind to listen to the last person speak. It was a sharing meeting, and he seemed a little bit different than the other people there. I figured I could probably trust what he said. And then he said he was an outpatient of the nut ward. And I thought, okay, that's it. We're done. You know, we're out, you know. So I couldn't wait. I knew where the door was. I could see the door clearly, you know what I mean? And I remember I was trying to make a dash for the door, and everybody got up, and then they grabbed me. And then he started praying over me. And I knew what this was. And that's the way I saw it. They were just ending the meeting. But I saw it as they were praying over me. So there was a perception problem right from the get-go. And as soon as they let me go, I ran to the door. It got bottled up. I was so frustrated. And this little guy grabbed my sleeve. He gave me a where and when with his... He said, this is my name and my phone number. You can call me anytime. And I'm thinking, I'm not gay. I want to call you. You know, I want out of here. I want to get out of this meeting. And he was just being nice. And I was just being hostile. And the only thing I could remember in that meeting is there was only one attractive woman. You see what you see. You know what I mean? And that's the eyes I was looking with. And I raced down the stairs. It was up two flights of stairs. When I got to the base of the stairs, this guy stopped me and asked me if this was my first meeting. And I didn't even want to talk. I'm really trying to get to the car. You know what I mean? And and I said yes. And then he went on to tell me a story about how he was a fireman. As if I was interested in being a fireman. I wasn't going to become a fireman. I didn't want to know anything about firemen. I want to get out of here, you know what I mean? But he said something at the end of that, very shortly, and he said, just remember, it's the first drink that gets you drunk. And boy, that went in. Because I knew, right then and there, those words stopped me cold. Because for 3 days, I've been waiting for this meeting. For some reason, I thought I had promised this guy on the phone I wouldn't drink for 3 days. But on the third day, I wanted to drink so bad I couldn't see straight. And I knew if I had a drink, I wouldn't make it to the meeting. Very strange. That whole scenario is so strange to me, you know. I never met the person that I talked to on the phone at the central office. But at the same time, you know, what gave me the strength to even make the phone call. You know what I mean? It was just so strange. And to me, it seemed like a voice said, call AA. That's all I know. You know what I mean? And I remember I went home that night and I was convinced. You know, I said, well, I prayed for the first time in about 13 years and I said, you know, God, I went to an AA meeting tonight. And I said, that's not it. I said, but I got a real problem and I need help. You know, that was the first time I prayed in all those years. And a little background to the story, right before, what happened right before that was simply this. I had lost everything in my life. Everything I tried to build or to do or succeed at, a wife, children, a car, a house, the ability to work, friends, everything, family, I drank it all away, or threw it away. And I was left with nothing, really, except having to drink on a daily basis. I didn't choose to drink. I had to drink. That's where alcohol took me. And I came from a regular home. My parents didn't drink. Obviously, I had to take lessons. You know what I mean? And it was really horrible. Just trying to become an alcoholic for me. But, you know, I became an alcoholic because I drank alcohol. And a predisposition, obviously, that I found out about later. But I didn't know what it was. All I knew, it was freedom for me. I was freedom from all those feelings and cares and worries and how you thought about me and how I felt and what I was going to do. And I was absolutely free. I was at one with the universe, with people. It didn't matter what kind of music you were playing, it was great. You know? I had a friend tell me when I got sober, and because we drank together, and that he couldn't talk to me when I got to the bar, until after I had my third double. He said, then you were civil. Yeah. Yeah. And usually that was somewhere in the neighborhood about 2 or 3 in the afternoon. You know, I could only work from about 11 to 2. You know what I mean? You know, I had a short tolerance for work. But anyway, so I got here and I got a sponsor. And the first guy that asked to be my sponsor said no. And I remember just having that feeling I wanted to rip the skin right off his face. Because I had a propensity to rage. You know, I had that all my life. I was always internally violent. I didn't know that it was fear. I really didn't know. And I was here for a year. And didn't know it was fear. The best I could do was identify anger. And that was just barely. And the reason was, I didn't have anger. I had rage. I went straight to rage. I went just nuts. You know, the least little thing tripped me off. You know, those were my social skills growing up. You know, I changed schools a lot. Every time I go to a new school, first day of school, you find a big guy, you hit him in the face. Friendship. That's it. That's how I connected with people. I didn't know any other way. And so I was always in some sort of path of violence. But at the same time, I was an altar boy. I was the best altar boy. I always showed up. You know what I mean? And my mother went to church every day, and they had me going to parochial schools every day, just like this guy, like this kind of church. And I was always in contradiction, because I knew once I went to confession, I was going to leave there and do it right again. And I knew that. Nobody had to tell me. I knew it. You see, I could not stop Mike from doing anything. You know what I mean? I can remember when I first lied, you know? They asked me, well, where did you get that truck? I said, I found it. Yes, right? I mean, that's how it is, you know? And I remember one time I tried not lying to my dad. I came home drunk and I was crawling up the stairs and he said, you've been drinking? And I said, I better not tell him I'm drinking. He's going to hit me. I said, no. He said, you're lying. Bam! Down the So, you know, he was my teacher. You know, my dad was a Golden Gloves boxer and all this stuff. So he taught me well. You know, how to take a punch. You know what I mean? It was wonderful. So anyway, when I got here, I knew this wasn't going to work for me. But I was holding on for dear life. You know what I mean? I hadn't been able to hold down food for the longest time. At the end of my drinking, what I would do is I'd stand in front of the sink, and if I had, you know, some kind of whiskey, it wouldn't matter what. I just poured over ice in the tallest tumbler I could, you know, half a bottle, and I'd just stand there, and I'd just try to drink it down as fast as I could, usually only half a glass because I would just clutch. And then force the rest of it down in the second gulp. And then I just wait till it hit, you know, and you could feel it hit, and then you sweat a little, and then you'd be okay for about an hour and a half. I was a chronic alcoholic. There's no question about what I was in my mind. And that's why I say I didn't believe this would work for me. And when I got here, and that was going on, and that first meeting happened, and I was also involved in this DWI class. I was trying to hold on to my driver's license. I don't know why, because that was the last thing I had. That was important to me. But I did, and I went to the other side of town, so nobody would know. No, I was in AA, by the way. They wouldn't nobody know I had problems. You know, my life is just a carnage, and I'm concerned about what people think. Anyway, and I decided to go over to Arlington and DWI classes and stuff like that, and I was doing that. And I found the trick, and the trick was, well, if you go to AA meetings, they're going to give you your license back. I could see it clearly. So I told my monitor, I'm going to AA. She said, well, where are you going? And I told her. I went to this meeting. She said, it was a really bad meeting. She said, well, you know, you still got a lot of your social skills. You went to the wrong meeting. This is the meeting you want to go to. And she sent me over to Foxhall. So I said, oh, yeah, that's where I belong. Yeah. See, I went to the wrong group. So I went to this other group. And it was much the same as the other group. But, you know, I had it in my mind that this was an upper crust group or something like that. And, of course, all I had was the clothes that I slept in. So I was quite well dressed. And, well, they were comfortable. You know, after you sleep in them a few nights, you just play skin. And time started passing. I got the second guy, I asked him to be my sponsor. And he said, well, we'll see. Give me a ride home. And then he didn't answer my question. But a night after night, I gave him a ride home. And I picked him up the next day and took him to meetings. He pretty much snookered me, you know what I mean? Because I was starting to go to, you know, noon meetings, 6 o'clock meetings, 8 o'clock meetings with him, because he had to go there And I was a guy with a car. So next thing I knew, I was going 3 meetings a day and things like that. And finally he asked me, I asked him, I said, I got a problem. I mean, because I felt I was going to drink pretty soon. I said, I need a sponsor. He said, yeah, you do. He said, let me ask you something. He said, can you take direction? I said, well, it really depends on the direction. There's a lot of different... He said, slow down. That was a yes or no question. And I remember the heat starting in my toes, coming right up my legs, up my chest, into my face. I was ready to explode with rage. You know what I mean? Because I was boxed. See? That's a yes or no question. My life's on the line. This son of a bitch has got me cornered. You know what I'm saying? That's what I felt like. I don't know how you would feel under this situation, but that's how I felt. I mean, I thought he was a nice guy. Now I'm ready to hate him. See? And somebody else answered inside of me and said yes. Because I wasn't going to answer at all. But the words came out, yes. He said, okay, this is what we're going to do. You're going to pick me up tomorrow. Nothing really changed. I said yes. You know what I mean? It's a crazy thing. You know? But something did change, didn't it? That was my extent or ability to change. Right there. I didn't have anything else. You know, all I had was weakness. And Valerie talked about dishonesty. You know, I see honesty today as a practice. I don't see honesty as something that's carved in stone. I mean, what's true today is not going to be true on Monday. You know what I mean? Necessarily. You know, certainly not the weather. But for me, it's how honest can I be right now? You know what I mean? And that's the only place I can be. And I've been really fortunate. You know, I've had people to help me. And I think to have change, it takes at least 2 or 3. You know? And the way I see it is me, my sponsor, and God. You know, without that, there's no change. There's no possibility of change. You know? And the biggest thing he did to change me was we go through these meetings together, and he'd go around while I was not looking, and he'd talk to people, and he'd ask them if they had a sponsor. And he'd find people that didn't have a sponsor. He said, do you want a good sponsor? And I said, yeah. He said, go over there and talk to that guy over there. Well, the next thing you know, I'm 6 months sober. All these people are asking me to be their sponsor. Do you know what I mean? And I'd say, I'll get back to you. I don't know. Because, I mean, I'm flaky. You know, 6 months, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? I mean, I was a real bad alcoholic. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I was so unstable, I can't even tell you. You know what I mean? Everything was wrong with me. There was nothing right with me. You know what I mean? I used to feel the tops of tables just to feel even. You know what I mean? It took 3/4 of a meeting for me to just to get, you know, relaxed enough to be able to walk out the door and not look jumpy. I was really bad shape, you know? And he said, yeah, well, I'll help you. I'll help you sponsor. I said, okay, then I can do it. See, he was on both ends of the deal, and I didn't know what was going on. I mean, you know, this guy was just way, way smarter than I'd ever have a chance, you know. And he knew everybody, you know. He knew Chuck C. real well. You know, he's good friends with him. He knew Bill Wilson real well, because he had done a lot of writing for him. And he had a sponsor. The late Buck Doyle. And they were just, to me, they were giants. They really were giants. Because they went everywhere. And back then, when he started in AA, there was only 12 meetings in the Washington area. And they went to all of them. That's how it was. You got in the car. Just like we do today. Everything he taught me, he had done with his sponsor. Everything that I've done with somebody else, I learned from somebody else. You know what I mean? My sponsor says a lot about monkey see, monkey do. And I heard that a lot from him until I started to realize that we learn a great deal from imitation. You know? I mean, I should have known that from a kid, you know. they told, you know, my mom said, stop hanging around with those kids. They're going to get you in trouble. Well, that's where I'm going. Right? I said, that's what I was attracted to. I wanted trouble. You know, it looked exciting to me. You know, and today, I see it. You know, I see it in the people that I follow. You know, I watch what they do. I listen to what they do. You know, my sponsor doesn't tell me what to do. He really doesn't. You know, so I got to pull stuff out of him. You know what I mean? Like that. You know, but if he says he did this week, you can rest assured I've taken that as a direction. That's what I do. You know, and the reason is, if I operate under direction, I'm safe. I'm safe from harm. What harm is that? Well, I can tell you this. I've seen plenty of people with the same amount of sobriety I've got in here right now not be here the next day. You know? And I know what it means to be sitting in this room today. I'm part of a remainder. You know? Yes, I'm a member of a large group, but that large group, 80% of that, or 70% of it anyway, has less than 5 years. That's just the way it is. And I think that's true almost anywhere you go. You know? Because things get good. And then it becomes a disease of drinking. You know? Instead of alcoholism. And alcoholism is what I've got right here now, standing right in front of me. And trust me, I need help now. Not yesterday. And it really struck me clearly one day when I was reading how it works and realizing that this is not for the newcomer. This is for Mike. Today. And I saw it with fresh eyes. I haven't seen it for years, you know. I said, whoa. And then some of the words started to jump off the page with new meaning, you know. Because for change to happen, there has to be contrast. When it's just me and me, there's no hope, you know. Yeah, I can start something for 2 days, like a diet. You know what I mean? You know, New Year's resolution. You know what I mean? You know, next year I'm going to pay my taxes on time. You know what I'm saying? I mean, all that stuff. You know, it's just crazy. You know, when Valerie was talking, I was thinking about stuff that I do now. I still do certain things now that I have to do to defeat my alcoholism. If I get a bill in the mail, normal people probably wait till the end of the week or the month or when payday is. I can't. You know what I do with bills? I stuff them in the top drawer. That's what I do with bills. So what I got to do when the bill comes to the house is I got to write out a check, put it, I got to have stamps ready. See? Oh yeah. Because the other side of me is going to say, you know, you need that money for something else. You know what I mean? What about... Oh, yeah, and somebody's birthday's coming. You know what I mean? I mean, just all kind of stuff. You know, and that's how I end up in a jackpot. And that took years of financial jackpots in sobriety, you know what I mean, to understand how this alcoholic is. And the only way I have to get around the corner first before my alcoholism catches up with me, you know? And it's that way all the time. You know, if someone asks me what to do, I better be sure I do it right after I tell them what to do. If I suggest that you read something, I better reread it myself right now. Am I doing it right now? Because otherwise, I'm going to become a tin god in AA and start telling people what to do and not doing a damn thing. And that's how you end up dead. But you go nuts first. And I got people right now with over 20 years of crazy and shit. And then what they did is they just stopped doing this and become tin gods and telling people what to do. And that's how you do it. And your recovery's gone. It just vanishes, you know. I've seen it so much, you know what I mean? And I'm lucky. And I'm going to tell you how I'm lucky. I've had so many damn problems since I've been sober. It's kept me in the book and kept me close to a sponsor. And for the longest time, I was just bitched out about it. I didn't like it. You know what I mean? This is unbelievable. You know, my pigeons are doing so much better than me. How can that be, guys? But, you know what? I'm alive. You know? I'm not complaining. You know what I mean? My life is wonderful. I came down here last night, and Billy and his wife took us over to this cabin in the middle of this woods, Babbling Brook, and it reminded me of my childhood. It was like, I'm alive again. And anyway, now I'm acting like you. And, you know, the reality is, that's joy. You know, that's the truth of it. You know, I did. I had a wonderful parents and a wonderful childhood, you know. And this disease got in the way of my life. And it's just that simple. And the truth of it is, I got in the way of my life. And when I get out of the way and let God run the show, when I really, truly trust God and allow God, the God that's in me right now, that's in you right now, you know, to just take over, then it goes fine. You know, recently I've had a lot of deepening problems, I call them, you know, where our group's been under attack from a bunch of terrorists, dissenters, and we get this every 5 years. It's just like a game we play of some kind, and they were all former members. You know, they all decided not to do what we did. Anyway, the point of it is they just started really doing stuff that I've never even heard about before. They started going to the pastors of our churches and asking them to shut down our meetings, and it was causing a lot of trouble, and you could feel it. You know, the fear coming in because. Hey, it's threatening your life. You lose your meetings. It's that simple. And to listen to a sponsor, I had to listen to a grand sponsor. You know, this Clancy is my grand sponsor. And they both said the same thing. And then Jeannie C., I talked to her. She said the same thing. And, you know, and it had to do with silence. You know, even though you want to retaliate, you don't. You know? Even though you're angry, you pray for them. You know what I mean? Constantly. You know? And I have to forgive them. Because they're just as sick as I was. I am no better than them. And I had to understand that for me. You know? And that these traditions really work. Really work. You know? But the way you know they really work is when you're under fire. You know, when there's people who don't want to utilize the traditions. And you have to. You know? And what did it do? It just made me understand more. You know, and slowly but surely, as that group is winding down now, they're losing credibility everywhere. What's happening is we've been made to go into action and to really know these pastors. Not just the janitor. You know, or on such a level that we know each other. And I think it's a true benefit. And we've had to know our H&I members the same way, just as well as we know each other. And so it just, you know, I saw it. I mean, there it is clearly, you know, it's made us a stronger group, you know. And, you know, and I talked to Al and I talked to Jim up in New Jersey, you know, because we all coordinate all of it, because we all have the same kind of experiences, you know. Very active groups, a lot of young people, you know, with all that inherent joy. And, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, you get to know, you know, you need to share your experience, strength, and hope. You know what I mean? And it's nice to have comrades, you know, real brotherhood as you go down the path. I'll tell you that. People who do understand from experience, not just sympathize, but truly understand from experience that can be there and will guide you, because I need that today for me to change further. You know, to be the son that my parents wanted me to be. And really, what is that? They just wanted me to be happy, honestly. And I am. I'm reasonably happy today. You know, I can say that for sure. You know, I've had cancer for about a year. I guess we're about halfway there. I don't know where the hell we are. People ask me all the time, how are you doing? I feel good. That's how I'm doing. You know what I mean? I'm doing the same thing that Billy's doing. You know, we eat all this raw, crazy food. We're just weird as shit. But, I mean, you will change if you stay sober. You will change. You don't have to worry about it. You know, I never prayed till I got sober again. You know, once I got sober, you will pray if you stay here. You know what I mean? Even if you don't want to pray, you'll pray. Don't worry. You know, it'll happen. There'll be enough heat that you will pray, you know? And it'll be fun, too. You know? Because it's so easy to overlook all the beautiful, wonderful things that have happened to me. The peace that I made with my mom and my dad, who had passed away earlier. You know? And with my brother. My brother's followed me in the program. He's still sober. We're best friends. You know? And that would have never happened. You know? I have another brother in St. Elizabeth's. And I went over to St. Elizabeth's the other night to talk to the homeless guys. And there was something warm about that. You know, I got a brother here. You know, he's on the other side of the street with the crazy people. And I have a brother that's drowned in the Potomac. But I met other people that watched him drown, and they got sober. You know? And I have a sister, and she followed me in this program. And she's a little bit messed up. She fell in love with medication. But we'll just say she's changed, too. Something's different now. But, you know, the truth of it is, my life is wonderful and good because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been changed by Alcoholics Anonymous and a sponsor and a group, but most of all, by God. Thank you.